Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Rich, can you tell me some interesting things about Car and Classic?
Certainly. Did you know that at any given time, Car and Classic has over 35,000 cars and bikes for sale?
I did not know that.
And that every month they have over 4 million visitors to their site?
I didn't know that either.
And that Car and Classic is the new sponsor of Smith & Sniff?
Now that I did know, because I was in the same meetings as you.
Oh yeah. Smith & Sniff is sponsored by Car and Classic.
I know. I was there. I'm Johnny Smith.
I'm Richard Porter.
This is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things. Top of my agenda to talk about... when I say an agenda, I've written two things down.
You've got an agenda.
I've written two things down on a free notepad from, I think it's Volvo. Popeye with the pin in, I've written down. Which won't mean anything to you or the listeners, I doubt. I've been on a very sort of low-end, slightly lazy private investigation to work out who owns an abandoned Mitsubishi Shogun Pinin very near to my house. It's the front of the house was all overgrown for years, and someone's come along and chopped all the trees down and opened it all up. And the house looks like a haunted house. In fact, at Halloween, it's probably the only house that the kids didn't go to trick or treat at. And I've never seen anyone come or go from it. But on the drive, what interested me is the fact that amongst this huge amount of undergrowth is a garage door and then the drive. And on the drive is a Mitsubishi Shogun Pinin, 51 plate. So what, 21 years old, 22 years old. And I don't know why I keep looking at it. I don't need it. I don't... I should think it would be a fairly average purchase. And I just...
At best. Yes.
And I keep looking at it going, oh, does that... Need-? I think it's the saviour in me going, I could save that. It needs saving. It's probably got a few years left in it. It might be okay. And it's been covered in conifers all this time.
Well, yeah, so I was going to ask, was it completely swamped in all the undergrowth?
It was.
So has it got that sort of green bloom on the paintwork where it's touched foliage for years?
It's got a little bit of algal dusting. I think it's been so covered with underbrush, it's largely been dry. And all around the bottom of it, so the drive, you can't even see the concrete on the drive. It's all that sort of like... pine needles and underbrush, dry underbrush, the sort of thing that lights a fire really easily, kindling. Yeah. I'm not suggesting that you use a pin in as kindling would, but I feel like it could be a bit of a survivor. Anyway, I saw the owner today, just coming back from the school run, and I saw him, and my word, he is Popeye. Imagine Popeye, but not muscular, but everything else Popeye.
I feel like muscular is part of the sort of Popeye brand. So
I know
if
it
you're
is.
Taking
I
that
know.
Away, are you talking about the sort of scrunched up face?
Oh, I mean, like, is that an underbite or an overbite? What is that? What? It's a very unusual
chin,
profile,
really, isn't he? He's chinny, but then it's partly the chin is to sort of secure the pipe in place, isn't it? Or the under is
it's,
it underbite? Hang
on, yeah. Well, it's chinny, and I think it's like a DTM chin spoiler, and then all of the teeth are very set back in, so the grill is a long way back to the chin spoiler, if you know what I mean. Anyway,
looking at this picture of Popeye, I mean, he's physically not possible because, in fact, his mouth comes out the side of his nose.
Oh yeah, he does. Okay,
he's a curious looking fellow when you get down to it.
You mustn't analyse Popeye's face. It's a face of few lines, but actually there's a lot going on there to take in. So this guy is Popeye. He's got exactly the same face, couldn't really see his eyes, had a hat on, and was smoking an extremely thin pipe, which made me...
What?
Which made me giggle out loud, because it was very early in the morning. But also, the fact that you just don't see people smoking pipes anymore, do you?
No,
nobody smokes
no,
a pipe. I kind of dig it. But then I thought, wow, if that is indeed his pin-in, possibly pin-in from New, imagine the pong in the pin-in. imagine it.
How were the tyres on the pinion? Were they, are they flat?
I can't see. I can't see the bottoms of the tyres because it's covered in that kindling wood.
So much mulch and kindling.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'll see if I can get a covert photo for.
Is it two tone?
Yes, I think it's two tone. But again, I can't. It's mostly silver, and I can't see if the side. I need to have a look at the side because the side's the bit that's been covered up by the hedge most of the time. Can't tell if it's just got a stripe. A waistline stripe, or whether it is two-tone. But it is, yeah, and I can't actually remember the engine size, and possibly no one's interested. But
I'm going, I don't know, actually.
Because there were
myself.
The old Pajeros were Russian dolls, weren't they, for different markets, which is what I quite like about them.
Yeah. There was a period here when I think the Shogun had a sort of three-tier range, and there was your big fella Shogun.
Yeah.
Then there was the Shogun Pinion, but there was also the Shogun Spolts. Which was sort of in between, I suppose,
and then
L200, I think.
That's right. And then, of course, the one that we didn't get, but I know you love and I absolutely adore, is the Shogun Pajero Mini, which people think is the pinion, but it's not the pinion.
If I had to choose a Shogun, it would be that one. And I have to say, the thing that's important to remember about all Shoguns of all sizes is that, by and large, they're toss.
Are they?
Oh, I think so. I mean,
no,
the big
not.
Fella
Are they?
Was probably okay, but they let it go on for years. I mean, you could still buy a Shogun in this country until quite recently.
Yeah, you could.
Massively out of date. But the Pinion, I do remember driving the Pinion back in the day.
Yeah.
I cannot really remember much about it. According to this,
that will have a Cobra Head auto. There's no doubt.
Oh, my God, yes.
There's no
doubt.
Yes,
yes, yes.
That will be so thin at the base and so wide at the top.
Maybe that's why this guy bought him, because his Popeye-like huge forearms and sort of commensurately big hands allows him to grip the Cobra Head with comfort where nobody else could do that. But
maybe Popeye is a strict manual worshipper, though, because he likes physical labour, because it keeps it keeps arm day going, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and leg day.
So he's got an extremely aggressive race clutch in it.
Yeah.
For no
and
reason.
A really, really stiff throttle spring as well, just to level things up, otherwise you end up lopsided.
That's right. But no power gains. So it's still the stock transmission and engine.
Yeah. So is there another car parked outside the house, like on the street?
No. There's nothing else.
Okay.
So I think, I mean, he's an older chap. I'm wondering whether he's given up driving or driving got too expensive and he couldn't be asked. Judging by the maintenance of his house, I'm going to say driving got too expensive for him. And he thought, you know, I can't be bothered. I can get a bus from the end of the road, because there is a bus at the end of his road. And and he's got family and friends that help him to, I don't know, take him here, there and everywhere. He's probably old school, so never goes to the dentist or the doctor. Just going to say.
I told you about my new relaxed dentist. It's the weirdest thing. I used to go. I mean, I'm not a big fan of going to the dentist, but then who is? Except my
wife. I love the dentist.
Really?
Yeah, I'm that guy.
Oh, well,
I'm AC avoider and dentist attractor.
Interesting.
But I get annoyed because I don't need to go to the dentist very often. Luckily, I've got pretty good conditioned teeth naturally. So
you go for a checkup then every
year. I do. It's my Christmas present. I've got it in about 3 weeks. It's always December, and it's always my Christmas present to myself. And I might book myself in for a detail as well.
Ooh,
dentistry detailing. Yeah.
I used to like going for a detailing at my old dentist, because there was this lovely lady called Miriam who was always, I mean, she'd always give you a bollocking for not brushing properly.
Of course.
But then she was eternally locked in a struggle to find a new car that for some reason took about 3 years to sort out.
Really?
No, it started before COVID. And then when I went back to see her after we were allowed to go back to the dentist again, I was like, have you bought a car yet? She went, no, still looking.
Really?
And then we just, yeah, and then she would just sort of do the, obviously I couldn't speak much because she'd got her hands in my mouth, but she would do a sort of monologue about cars that she'd been looking at, and I used to enjoy it. I was quite sad. I saw her just before we moved out of London one last time, and it was a bit like, I'm really sorry, I won't be coming anymore, but good luck finding a car, because she still hadn't.
Oh,
but my main dentist in London used to give me a bollocking as well every time. You're not brushing properly. There's a lot of build-up here. Ooh, we've got to keep an eye on this one. And it's just, you know, it made to feel bad. And I've got a new dentist now. And I went to see him and he went, yep, everything looks great.
Ah, so he's lazy.
Well, that's the thing. I was like, it just feels like he can't be asked to be a dentist.
He's the kind of guy that washes his car at dusk. So you can't quite tell when you haven't quite washed it properly. It kind of looks great. And then in the morning you go, yeah, I missed the entire rear quarter, actually, on that side.
Yeah.
Oh.
You end up with that sort of like a shark's fin of road grime on one door where you swoosh the sponge unevenly.
It's true. He's that guy. He's that guy.
Well, that's the thing. I went back with my kids to the relaxed dentist. And again, in London, bear in mind my kids went to a different dentist to me in London. And they always used to get, no, you've got to brush. Who needs to be? No, she should be brushing for at least 20 hours a day and all this stuff. And then the relaxed dentist just went, looking good. Yeah, looking great. I was like, you sure that they're okay, they're brushing? Yeah, whatever they're doing, just keep it up.
Oh, really? So no advice, no real feedback?
No. He's either very upbeat and optimistic, or he just can't be bothered with being a dentist.
He's a
high-level dentist.
Is he... you might have caught him when he's about 10 days away from going to the Maldives. and it's been a long couple of years, let's say. It has. We don't need to let's say. It fucking has. And he's just going, yeah, this guy, I mean, nothing's falling out and he's not throbbing with pain. So let's just push him on. Come on. Let's push him on. He's fine. It's a bit like an MOT tester that, you know, a Ford KA comes in. He knows. He knows it's frilly where it's going to be frilly because it's a KA. And he kind of goes, yeah, but it's okay for a KA. That'll be fine for another 12. And like my old MOT tester used to do, he used to do the stealth preservation on KAs. I think I've told you about this in a previous video. Did I tell you about this?
I don't think... This is the Stealth Preservation Society. No, I don't think you have told me about this.
He used to feel sorry for Ford KAs because he knew they decayed in all the same places and most owners were totally oblivious to it. So when he used to get one in that looked like it was hanging on in there, as it were, he used to wire brush down the fuel filler neck area and the arches in underneath, and he would, out of his own expenditure, he would hose it down with some wax oil.
Oh my God!
During an MOT,
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, he just went, well, he said the thing is this one, I think I like the person, and this one seems like it's got a lot of life left in it, because I think he realised that they died too early. A lot of these KAs, they died too early. And I know you've got a history with KAs, and a lot of other people have too. But
Well, my friend Hannah, who had a KA for years, loved it, but then it came to the point that, you know, the KA crunch point, and sort of crunch and then flake off point.
I was going to say, and condemned point.
And she was like, "I need to go buy a new car. What would you recommend?" And I was like, "I don't hear you with this and that and that." And then. And she went, do you know what I've done? I've just gone and bought another KA. And she'd found, like, she knows what she's looking for with KAs, having lived through the decay of a KA.
Decay of the KA.
And she found, like, you know, classic, sort of not quite deceased spec, I think, but like super low mileage, garaged, elderly owner, no rot, late one.
What, knocking on heaven's door spec? What'd you call it?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And got that. And she's just like, I just like KAs. I just wanted another KA. And she's like, I know what I'm looking for now. I was like, you should start a garage.
I like that. That's how one makes specialists begin.
Yeah.
They just know.
It's like, if you know what you're looking for, you could sort of gather up all the survivors. I mean, there's not many that aren't a little bit crusty somewhere, because they go, don't they? They go.
I think I missed out on one. Again, not that far from where I'm renting a house here. There was always an old guy who had a KA from new, but it was a high spec one. And I can't remember the model. Was it a KA3 or a? It was really high gloss black with high gloss arches.
Yeah,
and it had it might have even had half leather interior.
Full leather was.
It might have had full leather.
An option.
Okay,
but it was horrible cheap leather.
Pleather look.
But yes.
Looked like an 80s jacket. a man in a pub
jacket. I seem
to remember
at some point as well, I think those high-spec KAs, that you remember the original KA when it came out, the dashboard moulding was blue.
Yes.
And then they introduced a different colourway, which looked a little bit more sort of upmarket and luxurious. It's like, I think they called it truffle or something. It was kind of beigey.
Didn't you add
probably
one?
Probably know a little bit too much about KAs.
I still can't believe that you bought one brand new.
No, it wasn't new.
Oh, I thought it was.
No, it was. I mean, it was a year old and it had been a courtesy car at a body shop.
What? So yeah. It would have done the equivalent of 100,000 miles then through people's hands.
Well, it was weird because
care.
It didn't have... Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it was a concern, but it was much cheaper than any other KA.
Well, of course. Kelsa Breeze, Sherlock.
It was a year old. It still smelt new. And it had, I can't remember.
It had 60.
Fewer than 5,000 miles on it. It was. I took it for a test drive and, you know, I was obviously thinking, well, the clutch is going to be rinsed on this. But no, it was fine. In fact, I never replaced the clutch in the time that I had it because it was fine.
I bet it had 6 magic trees strung under each of the seats, you know, with the elastic stretch, yeah. So you can't
no, honestly,
see them.
It smelt like a new car. That was one of the things where I went, oh, flipping heck, this is, you know, it really did. It had quite strong new car smell. I remember because there was a point at which I went away with some mates to the countryside and I drove because, you know, we're all in our early 20s and I think I was the only one who had a half decent car that would get us there. But afterwards... Having had the three of us in my car, everything got muddy, and the new car smell was somehow had gone over the course of one weekend. It felt like it was completely erased by just having smelly people.
Oh,
well,
sweaty
in it.
Guys in it or something.
And I remember being quite cross because it was like I like new car smell.
Oh.
Anyway.
Well, look, Ford cars. Yeah, so this MOT tester chap, Ed, was inadvertently on a one-man mission to preserve all the regional KAs that weren't owned by wankers. And he still says, oh, some of them stopped coming to the garage at some point. Maybe they got sold or whatever. He said, I still sometimes wonder if they're going. They're still going.
He should have kept a record of the registration and then he could have looked them up on the...
He could have done, couldn't he? He's a bit like one of those people on social media that they save a seagull that's got some netting trapped around its ankle or a sea turtle that's got too many barnacles weighing down its back and they pull their boat over and not that you pull boats over, do you? I don't know. Maybe you do. And then lift the turtle out of the sea and scrape the barnacles off its back with a penknife and then put it back in. That's like, and then you go, go on then, go on, live on. Another thing that we must talk about, Richard, we were supposed to talk about it a few weeks ago and it's something that, it's almost a gift that keeps on giving.
Easter.
No, not that. Okay. And certainly not Christmas, not yet.
No.
We need to talk about the CEO of Fiat and off of the Stellantis group, the CMO of the Stellantis group, don't we? Oh, sorry. I after the word Stellantis, you know what we have to do.
Yeah, just drop in. you brought this to my attention a few weeks ago. We were going to talk about it then, weren't we? Olivier Francois.
Wow.
Is that his name?
Yes.
I wrote it down.
It is.
Where is it? Hang on. Olivier Francois, yeah.
Yeah.
So he is the CEO of Fiat. CMO, Chief Marketing Officer, is that right? Not Chief Medical Officer.
He could be Chief Medical, and he's the creative power at the wheel. This is what he's put in his own Instagram. He's the creative power at the wheel, driving revenue and brand equity.
Right.
Okay. I love your response to that. Right. Where do we go?
Well, I would urge people to go and have a look at Olivier Francois's Instagram and draw your own conclusions. But it was the reason you pointed it out to me was because he seems to spend most of his time schmoozing with celebrities.
He does. If you scroll through his Insta, he seems to spend a worryingly large amount of time just getting photographs with famous people. And I'm still unconvinced as to whether he really knows them or whether he's one of these people that sort of insists on collaring them and chasing them down for a photo.
I'm getting a distinct... Because I just feel like, for example, Vin Diesel's on there. And some of the other cast of Fast and Furious movies. And but there's one with... I think there's one with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, is there?
But it looks like they might have been filming some Fiat advert or something. So it feels like he either spends Fiat's money booking A-list stars so that he can have his photo taken with them, or he goes to parties and then just bothers them until they do a picture. Because
Ben Stiller, he's wished him a happy birthday. He wishes a lot of people happy birthday. He remembers birthdays. He's a proper birthday rememberer.
Is there a point at which birthday rememberer goes from thoughtful to stalky?
Yeah, I think so. I'm really glad you remember.
There was a lad at my school who knew everyone's birthday, and it was always a bit odd. But anyway, yeah. There's a picture of him with Mikhail Gorbachev.
Oh.
Which, in fact, he's wishing him a happy birthday, but then going, you're much missed. So he's wishing a dead man a happy birthday.
Oh, dead
birthdays.
Just
so he can wheel out the photo of them together, which to me feels a bit off. But
there's a lot of that, isn't there? There's a lot of that. I'm looking at the Vin Diesel one as we speak, and I've realised the jumper is tied around the neck in a sort of yachting/cricket game style.
Who? What? Olivier Francois?
Yeah, I can't imagine Vin Diesel goes for the thin knit jumper tied around the neck. But he might.
No.
Do you think? No. Oh my gosh.
I think he would do it if he was in an appropriate place for it. Like if he was, you know how he lived in London for a while when they were filming here? I think he lived down in Richmond or somewhere. If he decided to really throw himself into local life and went to, like, you know, watch some cricket on a village green, I think he'd show up with, like, a, you know, a cricket jumper over his shoulders just to blend in.
What, Vin Diesel? Seriously?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he's quite an intense guy, and I could just see him sort of go, hey, I live in England, I'm going to do English things today, and he'd just go and watch some cricket and then go to a really beamy pub.
Did he get
a
some
pint of brown booze?
He got some notes sent over from Madonna and also Nicolas Cage. Oh, and he's wishing Bruce Springsteen, the Boss, a happy birthday as well. Of course,
has he got a photo of him with the Boss?
Yeah, he has. Because I think wasn't the Boss last year on a, was it the Super Bowl campaign for a Jeep?
Jeep advert, yes.
So I think he might have met him on set, as they say.
Of course. Yeah, there's no way you're keeping Francois off set if the Boss is doing an advert.
Oh, shit,
bloody
no.
Bloody hell.
Francois is on set.
But this, your point is a salient one. It's like it doesn't seem to leave him much time for CEOing of Fiat.
That's
or CMOing of Stellantis.
That's my worry, Richard. That's my worry. I would think...
You're worried. Does it keep you up at night?
It's my worry, where if I was paying money into said business, I'd be like, yeah, Olivia, have you done those projections that we were asking for? And we've got to make those really crucial decisions about unemployment, you know, getting rid of some staff, maybe closing that factory in Turkey. Yeah, I haven't done that yet. I'm so busy.
We got the marketing forecasts for Q4. No, sorry, I was busy following Julia Roberts around until she did a selfie with me.
Yeah. Olivier, have you been ill? Yeah, I've been really ill the last 3 days. What, you haven't been on Lake Como with George Clooney? Are you sure you haven't? Yeah. You're absolutely sure you haven't, because your social media tells a different story.
When you said you were going to spend a week working from home, what I actually said was I'm going to spend a week working from Como.
Come over.
Until George Clooney agrees to a selfie with me. Okay. It's weird. It's just, but
I've just found another. Anyway, we will stop this now. But I've just found an amazing picture. It's not with a famous person. It's actually with his family. But the reason I've brought this up is because he's wearing a white linen shirt that's so thin that it's not actually white. It's sort of partly skin colour. And the only white things are the double seams for the stitching across the shoulders and round the arms and the front pockets. And everything else is sort of a bit see-through, but yet he's not that kind of guy. He's not Chris Hemsworth. So
no. He looks more like a CEO than he looks like a member of the Hemsworth family.
Quite.
That's certainly
so
true.
For example, I couldn't wear that shirt because it just wouldn't work for me.
No.
And I don't think it works for him either. I also think that judging by what everybody else is wearing and the background scenery, I think they're in a very humid place.
Oh, well, in that case, two things. I would imagine that perhaps then it's got soaked with sweat or humidity. And
yes.
B, perhaps in real life it doesn't look see-through. That is the cruelty of the camera.
Oh, it's the harsh flash gun. Okay,
I was at a thing last week where I was I was standing a few paces back from a lady in a black sort of, I don't want to say chiffon-y sort of skirt. Long
Bugatti
skirt.
Chiron dress.
Yeah, it was a really nice, smart skirt. She was very smartly dressed. But then a load of, like, strobey effects and stuff went on and some bright lights, and suddenly I could just see her pants.
Oh, yes,
I was a bit like, ooh, I bet she doesn't realise that strong, intense light causes that skirt to basically become see-through. But that's the perils of the sort of thinner fabric, isn't
it? It's the danger of the yoga pant.
Well, that's something different, isn't it? I've never mentioned this to you before. I always mean to every morning when I take my kids to school. It's like, if I was a fashion designer, I think my new line for autumn winter 22-23 would be school run chic, and it would be just a mad grab bag of, like, for the men, ill-fitting caps and fleeces, but then with jogger bottoms and some very old trainers. For the women, maybe some yoga pants, but also with huge baggy jumpers.
Yes.
Or a very long warm coat, but then with workout shoes.
Yeah, so workout downstairs, upstairs is sort of 90s football manager.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just, I love
all
it.
Those
and I'm
triathlon
completely guilty of this.
Coats that look like the sort of thing you wrap a horse up
those
in when
ones.
It's cold outside.
Yes, yes, exactly.
I can't remember
those.
The name of them, but you know the ones.
But I was just, I'm completely guilty of this. I took the kids to school the other day just wearing like a really old zip up fleece and then not a beanie hat, but like a pull on woolly hat. And jeans and then running trainers, and it just went, none of this goes together, but it's just,
I think maybe
it's expedient.
Should we just have a winter of that where everyone sees if we can outdo one another? It just looks like a fancy dress box drive through. So I've noticed a lot of young people at the moment wear very, very baggy dad fleeces.
Yeah.
Intentionally.
Everything, we've talked about this before in the manner of old men who don't understand what's going on, but the clothes are going baggy again, aren't they?
They are. Yeah, they are. And the oversized trouser is back. Not quite.
The oversized trouser is back with a flappy bang.
It is, yeah. We're not talking sort of Last Dance NBA suit yet. Although
not yet,
we might
be coming. I mean, it must be coming by definition if it's all coming back around again.
I think it will. I've seen some red carpet young guys, sort of guys under 25, and they are wearing some extremely baggy trousers, sometimes with high waistband as well.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So, this is not relevant to cars, I've just realised.
No.
At all. Not even
at all.
Slightly close.
I sort of bring it back to cars, but I just wanted to say hello to a listener.
Okay.
Called Brendan McAleer, who you probably know. He's a Canadian car journalist.
Oh, yeah.
And a long-time listener to this podcast. And, you know, I was in the America week before last.
Yes.
And Brendan was staying in the same hotel as me. And I just arrived, and I was very sort of woozy, jet-laggy, just not really sure where I was or which way was up. And he came over to say hi. And I just, I felt like I did a very bad hello. I did a sort of, well, I was like, oh, hi, yeah. And then I messaged him and I said, because he's a journo as well. And I was like, are you going to, because we were at the LA show, so you're going to be at the LA show, you know, come and say hi properly and try and make a better job of it this time. And then we didn't ever manage to cross paths again. So I just want to say hello to Brendan and thanks for coming over to say hi.
Brendan's good. He's long been a positive mentioner of what we do. So thank you for that, Brendan.
He also mentioned this hotel had, it was one of those weird hotels like you get a lot in Japan where it occupies a slice of a tall building.
Oh.
And has that confusing layout where the reception is on the top floor or near as damn it. So in this case, the reception was on floor 70 and all the rooms were below it. But it had touch screens for the lifts. And so rather than just a button to call the lift, these touch screens sunk into the walls between the lifts. And you put in the number of the floor you wanted to go to. And then it came, you got in the lift, no buttons in the lift, but there was a notice in the lift that said, if you've got in here and you haven't pre-selected a floor, use the emergency phone to ring for help.
What?
Which immediately highlights a massive flaw with these fucking things. But it was Brendan, I saw Brendan on Twitter going, the lifts in this hotel are operated by touchscreen. It's like staying inside a massive Volkswagen. Because predictably, the touchscreens weren't very good at registering touch.
Or what so you wanted to actually achieve.
Yeah. It's infuriating. But also, so there's a lift, a very fast lift from the ground floor to the 70th floor where reception is. And then you got in a different lift to go down to, in my case, I think I was on floor 54. But it meant that to leave the hotel, if I didn't want to go, you know, I just wanted to get out of there from my room, you had to go to the smaller lift and go up and across and then down. And all I could see, you know, Fast Love by George Michael?
Yes.
So every time I had to leave the hotel, in my head I was going, got to go up to get down, got to go up to get down, like the end of that song, which was, it kind of amused me when actually it was a massive ball ache. Anyway, Hello Brendan was the headline.
Hello there. Brendan.
Hello.
Good mention of the George Michael Fast Love track, which is still one of the greatest for me. What a tune. Did you watch that the perfume advert that I forwarded you last night?
Oh, no, sorry, I didn't.
Okay. Don't worry. I'll let you watch it in a minute while I'm talking about something else. But basically, I know we are about to start the festive season. Some morons have put all their decorations up in November, which I simply don't understand. And I'm not being a party pooper here. I like Christmas. But of course, it means the completely mental aftershave and perfume adverts have come on.
Yes.
Real crackers, mad, unrelated ideas, all being just sort of pressed into a 30-second ad. Honestly, I watched a couple last night and I laughed out loud at this one, but one of them really caught my eye because it's car relevant in an interesting way, in an us way, not in a sort of, look, it's a gold-plated Bugatti, blah, blah, blah. Mm. I think it's Paco Rabanne Invictus, but I'll double check. I wrote in my notes Paco Rabanne Invictus 16 valve just to remind myself. But we'll put a link to this. And I took a screen grab. In fact, I'll send you the screen grab right now while we're on air so you can get an idea. This is like the end shot of a really kind of like pretentious, hey, get a look at me. I'm the greatest. I'm invincible.
Johnny Smith. Oh,
I'm invincible.
What's going on here?
Right. This is a
holy shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that a Chrysler 180?
Yes, it is. I knew you'd get it because that's the guy that you are. So
bloody hell.
In a Paco Rabanne perfume ad.
Talk about these ads being a grab bag of ideas.
I know, right?
This is baffling. It's a man standing on the roof of a Chrysler 180 near a Ferris wheel while a dinosaur roars over the top of an American diner.
Yes, it's very odd.
And some, like, display jets, like the Red Arrows or something, come out of the clouds.
That all happens within about a second and a half, just so you know.
Jesus. And it's Paco Rabanne.
It's Paco Rabanne, and there's... I'm actually trying to find it now, but it's not... It's a guy walking down the street, topless and playing basketball, and then he's doing sort of boxing training on the roof of a he's doing boxing training on the roof of a high building. Then there's sparks flying out of a nearby telegraph pole as he walks under it in a suit, and then right at the end, he's standing on the roof of a Chrysler 180 doing the Rocky kind of invincible pose, you know, with the arms in the air. It's called Paco Rabanne Olympier. Okay, so it's Olympia. But I couldn't resist freezing and taking a picture of it out of curiosity because I thought of all the cars to put at the end of this really glamorous ad, you've got quite an unsuccessful Roots Group car, but not only that.
Oh my God! Yes.
Look closely. Look at the fuel filler.
Oh, the fuel filler's got an aftermarket cap.
It's got a generic universal "I've left mine at the fuel station" cap on it.
It's a lovely period touch, but also, Jesus Christ. I feel like the Chrysler 180 wasn't successful really anywhere, but I wonder if that was shot in Spain, because I feel like it was built down there, wasn't it? And for the local consumption of mediocre big cars. And
I think it was...
because they would survive better down in a sort of Mediterranean climate if the ad was shot down there.
Yeah, I'm thinking it is Spain. Somewhere like that.
Was it big in... Did they have it in South America somewhere?
Yes, they did.
Is it possible...
I was just about to say it could be South America spec. Yeah. So I'm wondering if right at the end of the ad, it'd be nice if there was a little bit of consumer information, like he's rising his hands in the air. He's doing that out of sheer frustration because he's broken down, probably because of low oil pressure, because, you know, 3-bearing crank when it should have been a 5-bearing. I think my brother always mentioned that. I think they had a notoriously weak crank bearings. And maybe that's the crux of this whole perfume advert. He's walking home because he broke down, but he walks home in a really glamorous way. So it's not the walk of shame. It's the walk of glamour.
I think this is a great example of an observable phenomenon, which is advertising directors particularly, but also music video directors sometimes, just picking an old car because it's an old car and it sort of has that novelty factor.
Yes.
And therefore it's cooler than a new car. If he was just standing on the roof of an Audi A4, that would look a bit rubbish.
Yeah.
But something old that most people won't know what it is.
No.
It sort of gives it that kind of quirky coolness. And it doesn't matter that the actual car is TOS or that it's got a Halfords aftermarket fuel filler cap in it. It's just interesting because it's different.
And that's what I love about it. That's what I love about it.
No, it's fair enough.
I thought you'd appreciate that silly little observation.
I do appreciate that.
Observation. Verdeniation. It is.
I was just looking at things I'd written down. I realised I'd written down something. I don't want to show off, but I did go to America the other week for 5 days. It's quite intense. But
screw you.
But
you're dead to me. You went on another podcast.
Oh yeah.
You were.
Hey, do you know what happened?
Highly
as well?
Successful.
Bloody hell, if I haven't told you about this. So I was outside the hotel. We just got in, come back from the show, and one of those new Hummers rolled up.
Oh, electrical Hummer.
Frigging massive.
Yeah, isn't it like just a children's school bus?
Yes. 4.1 tons, apparently.
Bloody hell.
Insane. Out gets
Arnold.
Two of our rivals. Jack Ricks, the editor of Top Gear magazine, but who also presents, along with Rowan Horncastle, who also got out of the Hummer, the Top Gear magazine podcast. Those bastards. So immediately I pulled out my shank, ready to for a rumble, but they weren't in a fighting mood, so they just showed me around the Hummer. But then went into the hotel, and there's flipping Andrew Frankel from the Under Trouser podcast. And so I was like, this is becoming sort of... And then I found out that What's-His-Face Sam from Seen Through Glass was in town as well. I didn't see him, but I heard he was around. I was like, we could have a proper Sharks and Jets
style massive
podcast.
This could have been an Anchorman rivals face-off, like West Side
exactly
Story.
Exactly that.
Spec.
That's what I thought. It had the potential for... I was there clicking and trash-talking Jack and Rowan, and then Andrew just came in and went, I think we've got ourselves a three-way podcast smackdown, and then Sam could have just pulled up in some Porsche or something.
Come on, you piss artists. Yeah. I needed to be there.
I know.
Well, I wasn't there. I let
call
you know.
You for help, but you were 8,000 miles away. Yeah. So, no, it was really weird. It was everyone, by the way, is extremely cordial. We're all friends. It's all fine.
We are all friends.
But I just thought it was quite amusing that all that distance from home, there are the sort of top-rated British car podcasts all hanging out, agreeing.
Well, next time we'll go together and we'll outgun them all. Not with actual guns, though.
No. I just had some observations from America. One of them is just that it's easy to forget. It's just like how much the V8 is a normal engine over there.
Oh, yeah, that gets me every time.
Just hear them
a
lot. And then, I was picked up from the airport in a Chevy Suburban.
Okay.
And it's just got a V8.
Yeah, petrol.
I went out for dinner with a friend of ours who lives over there, and he has now got a G-Wagen for some reason.
A V8 one?
And he was giving me a lift home after dinner, and we got overtaken by a Dodge Charger, one of those wide-bodied ones, making a right noise.
I mean,
it was incredible. But that's just a sort of normal car. I mean, I know they're not normal. Not everyone has one.
No, but they're not really expensive.
They're not exceptional.
Or exotic.
No one really double takes because it's just like, oh, there's another one of those. Mm. It's still like the V8 is still, I know it is actually sort of on the way out, and like Ford don't do, you know, V8s in trucks anymore or anything, but there's still a lot of V8s and, you know, your residual V8s in older cars, and you just hear
eight.
You just hear that backbeat on the street all the time. I mean, you just simply don't hear.
No.
Like, it's a real novelty here. So, and I just thought, that's quite a...
my neck got bored of twisting around really quickly.
Yes.
Going, oh,
yes.
It's a V8. And you go, oh, that's actually a UPS van.
Yeah,
go,
exactly. Yes. Oh, that's V8. A classic, isn't it? Just a really oily, wet V8. And it turns out that it's just like a bus or something.
It's an airport shuttle.
Well,
yeah, it's an airport shuttle. You know, those kidnap buses, which I can't remember the names of them. But, yeah, it's exactly that. And you go, oh, bloody hell. So not that glamorous then at all. No.
By the same token, though, I wrote this down. I was in the back of the car on the way from the airport, and we were in traffic on the freeway. We were alongside an E90 BMW 3 Series, but it was a 330i, and it wasn't in spoke trim. It was an SE.
Oh, that's easy listening. I like that.
Yeah, but I was like, that would be a very unusual car here in the UK.
Yes,
and actually, that's sort of. I don't know, I need to check this, but that feels like that's almost like a base model in the US. I don't think it is. I think there was a 325 and possibly even a 320, but around that time. But it's like that would have just been a sort of someone's normal car.
It's funny you should say that, because at the NEC Classic Car Show recently, where I was taking part, a lot of people came up and wanted to chat about the Late Break Show, but also this podcast, which is lovely. One couple came up who actually... The chap, I recognised him because he brought an MG SV to one of the Late Break Show lives. But he's recently said, oh, you'll appreciate this. I've just bought this for my sort of like interesting winter car. And it was a Passat W8.
Oh.
And I went, shit me. I said, that's probably rarer than your MG SV. And he said, yeah. And then I suddenly thought, did they ever sell those in the American market?
That's a good question.
Because I remember testing one when it was new, and it was such a sleeper. I did a run what you brung at Santa Pod with it, and it was quick, and it impressed a lot of people. That. But you had to take traction control off because it used to bog really hard. And it didn't need traction control because it was four-wheel drive. It would sort of mechanically sort itself out. It was really good. And now they're not worth anything because nobody wants to run, surprisingly, an 8-pot
Passat. There's a reason for that, though, isn't there? Which is that if something goes wrong, the shitter, aren't you? It's
just, you're never going to...
Probably horribly complicated. Imagine how bad engine access is in that car.
I bet it's appalling. If anyone's ever worked on a W8 Passat, please write to us and tell us.
It's my certain knowledge that when that car was new... one of my colleagues from Evo magazine went on the launch of it and said, after driving, because there's the manual and the auto, wasn't there? And
could do a manual W8?
Yeah, yeah.
What?
But the auto was a particularly tragic installation of an automatic gearbox, and this guy said to one of the engineers, like a quite senior bloke, the auto's not so good, is it? And this guy, German, went, oh, yeah, the auto is shit.
No.
Yeah. They would say he was really candid about how it was like just completely half-assed work because they need to do an auto. But yeah, there's a manual.
I didn't know there was a Manuel.
It was sold in the US, apparently, by the way. And according to this from Road and Track, I assume they know what they're talking about, that the Passat W8 wagon, they sold 97 in the US.
In the whole of America.
That's a rare car. That is a rare,
right,
rare car.
Right, if you're listening to this, Doug DeMauro, go and find one of those. Go on. I dare you. And then shout about it on Cars and Bids.
At the moment, I know it's always tricky with how many left because of the way the DVLA writes down car names in lots of different ways. But if you type in Passat W8, under Passat W8 4 Motion, 24 currently in the UK. And under 4 Motion Tiptronic, that's the auto then, isn't it? It's 41. So 65 Passat W8s in the UK at the moment.
Bloody hell. That is rare.
Rare, but I'm going to say nobody cares.
Yes.
Very few people care.
That is very... That is probably the top of the pile of rare, but nobody cares in some ways. In terms of the cost of it, the amount of engineering gone into it, but yet nobody really gives a flying shit.
A spinning toss about it, which is fine. But more power to the guy with the MGSV for just, you know, his dedication to obscure and slightly interesting cars.
Oh, no, I think it's great. I wanted to talk about... we didn't mention about the CEO of Jaguar sort of running away the other week.
Oh, Jaguar Land Rover.
JLR, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a bit odd. It's only just pinged into my mind because I was browsing the auctions of Car and Classic and I came across a car which I thought Richard would rub his knees over that, which is a Jag XJR X300 model, factory manual.
Oh.
Yeah. Apparently one of only 102 ever made.
Now, that's one of those cars where I wonder if actually the manual would be a bit horrible.
Do you know what? I'm willing to take the gamble on that. Because,
oh, I'd love to try it. Don't get me wrong. I'd love to try
it. Yeah, and it looks really, really nice. It's a good-shaped car, that.
Yes, it is.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, and the auction's not over. I'm not going to buy.
But, yeah, old Terry Bolero walking away from JLR is a bit odd, and I do wonder. The reason given is personal reasons, and that always sounds highly implausible, doesn't it? I'm just leaving for personal reasons.
Well, he's been doing it 2 years. I don't know whether he's deemed a successful business person. I don't know whether what he's done has made a big difference. But I spoke to a ex-Jaguar employee of high repute, who we both know, who won't be named, who basically said they're going to kill Jag.
Really?
Yeah. And I said, really,
having
though,
killed the electric XJ, they'll then just cull these new,
I think, and new, and this is
Jags they've got in development.
This is a somber conversation, but I think the bottom line is not enough people in high standing in the company care about it, which I think is an utter tragedy, given that I think in many, many ways it's a better, more interesting car company than Land Rover. But then that's just my take on it.
I mean, when you look at all these companies that are up and coming, and I think all bets are off with EVs, that people are more accepting of someone you've never heard of before in the EV space. But even so, I've read all these things about, you know, how much money and how much time it theoretically takes to build a brand. And you look at people like Lexus and Genesis, and, you know, you'd have to say Genesis and Infiniti as well haven't really caught on in Europe yet.
No.
They're still on the uphill struggle. Lexus did it, but, you know, they had the might of Toyota behind them. Mm. Takes a lot of work. An off-the-peg name that people have heard of. I mean, look at MG. You've got to say that part of the success of MG in this country in coming back from almost nowhere to be...
It's badge familiarity.
They're selling more cars than Volvo in the UK now.
I know.
And Citroen, I think, as well. They're really successful, considering that they were nowhere a few years ago.
Yeah.
But it's got to help that they've got a name that people, at least it generates a flicker of recognition. And from there, you can build on that. At least you sort of got the people's attention.
Exactly,
so
exactly.
If JLR threw Jag in the bin, you'd imagine there'd be a lot of up-and-coming companies who'd just be like, oh, my God, we'd fucking sandpaper our eyes for that kind of brand recognition and heritage that you could leverage into something in an advert or whatever. So
exactly.
It'd be... But at the same time, you know, they're not a charity. I don't know why he's gone as CEO or going, but I did wonder whether it is JLR's parent company, Tata, if they're they were impatient for more sooner, not just with Jag, but with sort of with Land Rover, at a time when it feels like they're still getting rinsed by the chip shortage. And I know a lot of people are.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
The waiting times on their cars are insane,
yeah,
by all accounts. And that's got to be, that's not actually good for profit, which they didn't. They just announced the last financial figures they released, they were still making a loss.
Yeah.
And I do wonder whether Tata just wanted more sooner. And it seems like Terry Bellaro is a bit sort of low-key kind of, you know, he doesn't overpromise sort of bloke. And the you know, that Jag plan is long-term, isn't it?
Thierry didn't do enough Instagram posts about Lenny Kravitz's birthday.
That's it. If he'd only just
see?
Had his arm around John Bon Jovi, then they'd have had record profits by
they
now.
They would have done.
It's just bizarre. So what else did your high-ranking former Jaguar operative, what was his take on it? Is just that he thinks that the Jag is just too much trouble for the people who don't care about.
I think there's people in a very high position there who he believes don't care enough about it and would rather focus their efforts on Land and Range Rover. And Land and Range Rover are still so desirable at the moment, regardless of their reliability record. The brand name is so strong, people will, you know, blindly buy. And they just want to focus on that, which I think, I do understand that, but
it's difficult, isn't it? Because on the one hand, as people who like cars, and I mean people who like Jags, you kind of emotionally you go, well, that's just ridiculous, just try harder, you've got to do something with Jag. But
yeah,
if you were John Harvey Jones on that programme from the 90s going in to sort out struggling businesses, you probably would go, look, just this is, I mean, Jag is, to all intents and purposes, dead at the moment, isn't it? I know they're still trying to sell cars, but quite half-heartedly. I don't even know if they're making XEs and XFs at the moment. They certainly didn't for a long time. Castle Bromwich was just shut because of COVID. But then it was a blessed relief for them not to have to be.
But I don't know how hard are they trying to sell the cars? That's the other thing. It's all well and good cars not selling, but how hard are you pushing these things? Because there's plenty of substandard cars that get sold. So,
well, yeah, but I wonder how many of them get sold, you know, for proper money. It's hard to know, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a conundrum.
It's just this thing.
It's a conundrum.
But it is a conundrum, and I don't know what I would do, except just that I would go down to the studio and say to old Geraldine McGovern, these new Jags better be the best-looking cars in the fucking world. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah.
Because that's it. Historically, Jaguars have always been very beautiful, and it's tricky. I mean, I know that, for example, you know, the original XF, which is still, I think, an absolutely brilliant looking car as medium sized saloons go. I think it's aged really well, and it's just a really nice looking, quite sleek car.
Yeah.
And then the XF we have now is just not. But I gather that's partly because of people in marketing going, oh, it has to have the same rear headroom as an E-Class.
Right.
Whereas previously, I think they'd gone, fuck it, it has to be really good looking and everything else will sort of have to follow along.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the, I had an XF Sportbrake, I've said it before, a V6 dieseless, when they first came out, which would have been, can't remember, 2009? I can't remember. Is it 2010?
But a bit later than that.
Was it 2012? Yeah, anyway. But around about that time, I had one and I thought it was so good. It was so good at loads of things. And it genuinely felt special. And a real driver's car when you wanted it to be. And a proper sort of like sweep you up and take you home safely when you didn't give them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, come on, Jag. And actually, to that end, I've been moving house, clearing up various boxes of hoarded tat. And if you can hear this rattle, this is a Super Top Trumps that I found that I must have had since I was a kid. You would giggle at this. I'll send you some pictures. I'll show you some pictures for patrons. It's called Super Top Trumps of New Cars. So instantly this dates it because obviously these were new cars when I bought this. So I'll just scroll through like the first 10. Saab 9000 Turbo 16 valve.
Ooh.
Audi 90 Quattro 20 valve. Opel Vectra 2000i 16 valve catalyst.
Oh,
brilliant. Citroen AX GT.
Yes.
Zender Vision 3. I think that was a concept car. Not sure it was actually real.
The Zender as in the body kit, people.
Must have been, yeah. There's a photograph of it at a very Technicolor motor show. Peugeot 205 GTI 1.9, Toyota Supra 3-litre, which is the one that with a sort of targa roof, the slightly jingle-jangle one, not the Vin Diesel one. Subaru XT Turbo Allrad.
Oh, my heavens.
Yes, I know. And then we have Alfa 164 3-litre V6. And then you've got some mad stuff like...
Can I guess the year?
Yeah. Go on then. Do you want me to tell you what's on the cover, what the cover car is of the Trumps?
Go on.
It's a 964 Carrera 4 911.
Ah. So I'm going to say 1990.
I think you're right, because I was thinking it's got to be 89 or 90, hasn't it? And I was shuffling through them. My kids were laughing because I said, this must have been brand new when I got these. These were new cars. You got the BMW M5, which is the E34.
Yeah.
And naturally, there's a photograph of it with the wheels turned, the wrong way for the aspect of the car. and it seems to be in the middle of a runway with an aeroplane actually parked directly behind it. No reference, but there we go.
Okay. Yeah. Classic of car.
It's classic
the airplane in the background.
Yeah. Oh, there's even a bitter.
Is there?
We've talked about bitter. There is a bitter. It's a bitter Type 3. Wow.
No.
It's not a car I'm familiar with, but there's a lady under a parasol sat next to it.
Again, a classic.
it's on grass. It's parked on grass.
See there like again. Parked on grass. Never looks good. We should probably wrap this up. But because not least because someone's trying to ring me, but I don't know who that is. Okay. But before we go, three things to tell you.
Okay.
They are... Sorry, I'm just throwing because someone's trying to ring me and I'm on the phone to you already. And it's like... And
how
it's
does that work?
Baffling thing that iPhones have where they give you some options and none of them immediately make sense. End and deflect. What does that mean?
End and deflect.
End and deflect.
Okay.
And you go, what? I'm taking too long to process it. And now the other person's hung up. Right, they've gone. So before we go, three things to tell you. They are one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Taste Crepe Show, in which he must tour Britain sampling the entire menus at independent creperies. This week, Le Maison du Deliciousness in Bude. If that's not your taste, there's also the Late Break Show. We've got so many excellent videos about cars and people who love cars, including a test of the Auracat.
And by the time this cast goes out, there'll be a freshly baked barn find, which I think you'll enjoy if you like 80s large coupes.
Oh, I know.
You know about
this one.
It will have just hatched.
Cool.
When you listen to this.
The second thing I've got to tell you is I have various books out. One of them is called Steel Flies. It's a spoof Cold War thriller written in the 80s by Roy Lanchester, the fictional car journalist. It's deliberately terrible. Don't let that put you off. The third thing I've got to tell you is that as of last month, the youngest B-52 bomber in service with the US Air Force is 60.
Gosh. Okay.
Yeah. Still going.
Well, I've got a fourth thing to discuss very quickly, is I've just picked two Top Trumps cards out of my collection at total random.
Yeah.
And I want to know which one you think is faster to 60. Is it a Renault 21 Turbo or is it a Peugeot 405 Me 16?
Oh. Now, are they both the two-wheel drive ones?
It doesn't say otherwise, so I'm going to say...
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to say...
Front-wheel drive.
Yeah, front-wheel drive.
I think... The Renault 21 Turbo.
You are absolutely right, Richard. It's like you know your craft. 7.4 to the 60 in the 21 Turb, whereas the My 16 is 8.6. Me 16 is 8.6x. They're almost...
8.6 seconds. I mean, it's funny because I drove a 405 Me 16 a few years ago and it was delightful, but it was not fast.
No.
By modern standards, it was really not that quick at all. It sort of got up on its toes when you revved it.
Yeah, everybody talks about MI16s. Nobody talks about Renault 21 Turbos. Nobody.
No, it's true.
They're almost the same weight. according to these top. Yeah, 1196 keys for the Renault versus 1110 for the Peugeot.
All right, well, yeah. That's been a bit car-y, hasn't it? A few people basically complaining the last time we did a car-y podcast.
We got told off.
Sorry about that. We'll try not to do it again, but well, we can find out for sure when we meet again next week, same time, same place. Until then, thank you ever so much for listening. Goodbye.
Thanks. Bye. I'm not going to talk about cars at all next cast, I promise. Not at all.
Not at all. No. Just more about the CEO of Fiat hiding in Madonna's garden.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.